people just see, well, you're sitting on the couch, you're being lazy, but like internally, I'm falling apart. We as ADHDers experience a lack of dopamine. That's some people will even call ADHD a dopamine disorder. We wake up with low dopamine. Sometimes we go to bed with low dopamine. We have tasks that reduce our dopamine. And so everything generally stems from that. So you have low dopamine, meaning you have low motivation, right? Because you have low motivation, you then feel bad for not being quote unquote able to do this particular thing. So you go into the shame spiral. You go into the shame spiral, you're experiencing this negative self-talk, you're feeling, making yourself feel almost even worse. Your nervous system starts to slowly shut down because it's an overdrive, it's overwhelmed. It's, you know, you have anxiety and now you're stressed out. Your brain is all over the place. You have foggy thinking. You don't know what steps to take next. And you kind of just keep digging yourself into a hole.
This is part two of my conversation with Lily, who is a behavioral scientist and ADHD coach. So if you haven't listened to part one of this episode yet, definitely go back and check it out. It is episode 5 of the podcast. In today's conversation, part two, we are continuing our conversation all about ADHD behaviors, habit analysis, environmental analysis, internal versus external stimuli. We talk about white coat syndrome and the diagnosis process. We explore the link between dopamine and motivation, and also the spoon analogy. So if you haven't heard of the spoon analogy before, it's definitely an interesting one that makes a lot of sense when it comes to how ADHD brains use our energy reserves, how we use dopamine and other hormones to fuel our executive functioning throughout the day. So I am really excited to bring you part two. Please enjoy after this intro. Life with an ADHD brain can be a wild ride, swinging between intense obsessions and hyperfocus to exhaustion and overwhelm. And sometimes these pendulum swings can feel very lonely in a world that doesn't truly understand neurodiversity. But what if our daydreaming, impulsivity, and fierce obsessions all make complete sense? What if we're not flawed or disordered, but rather living in a fast-paced world that wasn't designed for our brilliant ADHD brains? Believe me, I know firsthand that living with ADHD isn't easy, and we'll definitely talk about those challenges here too. But after decades focusing on the deficiencies, it's time for a shift. Join me as we explore the latest ADHD research and take a deep dive into topics like unconscious limiting beliefs, habits and productivity, mindset, self-care, and nervous system nourishment. I'll also chat to a range of neurodivergent guests so we can challenge the status quo, change the conversation, and shape the future of ADHD together. Theory as well that I often mention in my work, which is that like we have these sensitive brains, highly sensitive to stimuli, and we have intensities of disposition and hyperactivities, which we've already talked about, and emotional intensities too. And there is a spectrum across all of humanity. That's what like neurodiversity means, that everyone is different. It's a big spectrum. And ours, we fall down the sensitive end of the spectrum where the smallest things can trigger us or irritate us or inspire us. Like it can be positive too. And I feel like all of those things create what science calls an ADHD brain, which is really just our type of brain. And we're living in a fast-paced world and an industrial society, and we're going to mainstream schools, and there's no place for this more divergent brain in these systems. And I come from a teaching background, so I'm quite passionate about, you know, education reform around these areas. And so when you have a bunch of young people in a school that isn't designed for their brains, they're going to exhibit a lot of behaviors, which then scientists can look at and say, this is an irregular behavior. This is a behavior that doesn't really suit this environment of the classroom. This means that this child has an issue. And that is what you were talking about before, about when you are using only observable traits to inform your research and you're not taking the information internally from the subject. You have such a limited data set to draw your information from. And so what people like myself are doing, even though I don't have any medical background, only a teaching background, people like myself, and there's a bunch of TikTok influencers too, and Instagram influencers, and people who, you know, in my community who buy the planner, who just share their stories, and all of that data is so important, all of their stories. So if science bases all of its findings on observable traits, and the subject matter, such as ourselves, we can't articulate because we might only be 5, 6, 7 years old, what really is going inside of us and why we're acting the way we are, then it makes sense that there would be this divide between what science and the medical model has been able to glean about our types of brains, the ADHD brains, and what's actually going on. And I feel like for the first time in history, because of the internet, because of like sort of a broadening equality across all aspects of science and medical arenas. And when you go into the doctor now, you go in very informed. That's like the first time in history that's ever happened. The result of that is that people like myself who aren't medical sharing their stories, that's helping.
Yes, 100%. 100%. In addition to, you know, my ADHD story, one of the reasons that I also decided to seek help is because of social media, right? You start finding other women, for example, on social media, and they're talking about these experiences that they're having, and it makes it, it's so refreshing to see other people basically tell you this is what your life is, and you be able to say, yep, I relate to that. I relate to that. I relate to that, you know, and it very much makes a huge difference in the future of ADHD and the way that we can begin to help other people get diagnosed, whether they're younger or older or, you know, in their 60s, because that is becoming pretty common nowadays also, where people who were never diagnosed younger are now experiencing ADHD symptoms and know that they're ADHD symptoms, right? It's not that they never experienced them before, it's just they didn't know what it was. And so now they might be in their 60s or 70s and they're diagnosed with ADHD. And yes, although it makes it very, it's a very freeing diagnosis because now, like I said before, you know what steps to take. It also is a little bit hard because you're diagnosed so much later, you go through that grieving process of, I missed out on life. I feel like I could have been, you know, I could have been this type of person, or I could have had this particular job, or I could have been in this kind of relationship, or you think about all of the friends that you've lost, all of the experiences that you missed. And now with all of this new knowledge coming out, I have confidence that there are going to be more people who are diagnosed a little bit earlier, especially if their parents already know that they have ADHD, right? Knowing that it's genetic, knowing that it's passed from parent to child, it makes it a lot easier for the kiddos to be diagnosed and for their families to know exactly what they need early on, get that early intervention versus waiting till 7, till 15, till 25, till 30, 60, whatever. And so I definitely agree with you. I think mainstream media has made a huge difference in just the diagnostic process and also helping people advocate for themselves when they go into the doctor's office. Doctors are very intimidating, and especially if you've had a bad experience initially trying to get a diagnosis, you probably don't want to go back, right? You kind of going back to what you mentioned where you're told this is not what's going on with you, and you take the opinion of the doctor, the practitioner, the person who went to school for this, assuming you probably know better than I do, who's just read a few books, you know? And so you take that and run with it. And some people don't ever go back to get diagnosed, and some people do, but it's a decade or a few years later. And in the meantime, they're just struggling with their ADHD because they had this one poor experience. It's now a learned behavior to go to a doctor and feel anxiety, or, you know, the white coat syndrome that a lot of people might call it. And so you just don't go back. And I think that I'm, like I said, just very happy to see mainstream media talking about the honest truth of ADHD and what it really looks like. So more and more people are picking it up, and more people are getting diagnosed, which means more people can get help and really live life the way that they should be living life, versus feeling like they need to be put in this neurotypical box and constantly be stressed out.
Yep. Okay, so that was amazing. And I feel like I want to shift gears now and dive into some juicy things that I think people really, really want to know when you're talking to an ADHD coach who's also a behavioral scientist. So one thing I kind of want to bring up as like a scenario is when you look at someone with ADHD in their home and you see them, say, maybe on the couch, they're like scrolling on their phone, or you know, they're doing something, maybe it's just watching TV, and their whole house is an absolute mess, their kitchen's a mess, and you look at them and you're like, but you're just sitting there on the couch, and they look lazy, they look unmotivated. The sort of view from the outside in is that they're lazy and motivated, but from your perspective, and taking into consideration what we've already kind of covered, plus you mentioned a little earlier the shame spiral. So what might be going on the inside, and I don't even just mean what, you know, someone with ADHD goes, yeah, well, of course, like, I don't want to do it. Like, there's actually like almost layers beyond what even we ourselves know, unconscious layers. So can we talk a little bit about what might be happening and why we're stuck on the couch and why we can't do what we know we need to do?
Yes. I love the fact that you used the word layers, because that's exactly how I would have said it. There is almost a process to this. It's not always a great process, you know, but once you can recognize that it's happening, it makes it a lot easier to then going back to environmental manipulation or just setting systems in place. It makes it a lot easier to do that. So I always go back to dopamine dysfunction, right? We as ADHDers experience a lack of dopamine. That's some people will even call ADHD a dopamine disorder, because dopamine is the molecule that basically creates motivation. And we are very frequently low in dopamine. We wake up with low dopamine. Sometimes we go to bed with low dopamine. We have tasks that reduce our dopamine. And so everything generally stems from that. So you have low dopamine, meaning you have low motivation, right? Because you have low motivation, you then feel bad for not being quote unquote able to do this particular thing, so you go into the shame spiral. You go into the shame spiral, you're experiencing this negative self-talk, you're feeling, making yourself feel almost even worse. Your nervous system starts to slowly shut down because it's an overdrive, it's overwhelmed, it's, you know, you have anxiety, and now you're stressed out, your brain is all over the place, you have foggy thinking, you don't know what steps to take next, and you kind of just keep digging yourself into a hole. And a lot of people, because it's not, you can't see that, right? People just see, well, you're sitting on the couch, you're being lazy, but like internally, I'm falling apart. And once you can recognize that dopamine, everything goes back to dopamine. I always tell my clients, I'm like, what are you doing to increase your dopamine levels? You know, what are you doing to make yourself feel better before doing this task that you probably don't like, right? There's a reason, there are going to be ADHD ebbs and flows, right? Dopamine ebbs and flows. And if you can't recognize what you love to do, you can't recognize what you hate to do, it's going to be really hard to get out of that dopamine dysfunction, to get out of that shame spiral. And like you said, those are kind of the layers that falls into. So you have the dopamine dysfunction, you have the shame spiral, you have your nervous system going into overdrive, you continue to have this anxiety, now you have the brain fog, now you don't know how to get started on a task, so you continue to just kind of hang out on the couch because you're so overwhelmed. There's no end in sight on what to do. You just hope that the next day is going to be better. Let's try again. A lot of people use the spoon analogy. So the spoon analogy is basically you're allotted a particular amount of spoons in the day. So let's say you start off with 10, and each thing that you do throughout the day uses up spoons. So let's say getting ready, your morning routine is going to be 1 to 2 spoons, right? Maybe sitting down and doing a particular work task can be 3 spoons. Cleaning can be 1 spoon. You know, having a particular conversation can be 2 spoons. You're down to 1 spoon by the end of the day. And if you still have 6 hours left in your day, you're exhausted. Your dopamine is depleted. How do you get dopamine back? You can do it in a few different ways. You can go the nutrition route, which kind of takes a few hours to a day. Increase your protein intake, you know, eat some foods that also make you happy. I specifically say protein intake because ADHDers are oftentimes depleted in protein, in particular vitamins. So we're generally very low on magnesium and zinc. And if we can, which is one of the reasons that I work on nutrition with my ADHD clients, if we can increase protein, which allows us to create tryptophan, which then allows our bodies to create more dopamine, that can oftentimes very much help. If we can increase particular nutrients that help with focus, that help with serotonin output, that can very much help. But the fastest way to do it is just to do something that you love. One of the things that I really like doing with my clients is they'll have what I call an elements of interest worksheet. And so basically, it sounds like what it is. It's discovering the elements within each one of your interests, as opposed to saying, I like dancing. It's looking at all of your senses and thinking about why you like dancing. What does it do for you, right? Do you like the music? Is the music making you feel happy because you can feel the beat internally, right? Or, for example, some people say, I like concerts, right? Why do you like the concert? It's the beat, it's the lights, it's the particular sounds, maybe it's the crowd, it's the socialization, like so many little things that fall into that. If we can figure out specifically what senses need particular attention, we can then utilize that to create dopamine, right? So for example, when I'm feeling really down and I have a lot of anxiety, one of the things that I really love to do is take a warm shower, put on some music, but have the lights be really fun also. So I'll do it in like a pink or a magenta or some kind of purple or something like that. And so you set this whole scene. I'm hitting all of the senses, right? I have the touch from the shower. I have I get to see the lights, I get to hear the sounds, and that generally, for the most part, makes me feel like a totally different person. I'll come out and I'm like, yes, ready to get my day going, let's get started, I want to do my to-do list and everything, versus somebody else who might just need something simple, like, I want to go for a walk, you know, I just want to go for a walk, that's calming to me. That allows your nervous system to just relax. It allows you to stay grounded, bring it back. Some people really like somatic therapy also, where you engage, going back to senses, you engage your senses through touch, feel, you know, holding ice cubes helps reduce some anxiety. Once you can reduce your nervous system overdrive, then you can go into the thought reframe of let's reduce some of the negative thoughts because I'm not nearly as overwhelmed. I'm recognizing that maybe this is something that I was taught in the past, right? This particular task, for example, for some people, let's just say spreadsheets. Spreadsheets always give me anxiety, hate them. But knowing that that's the case, knowing that this is the process that my body takes when I open up a spreadsheet, right? It becomes a lot easier and to reduce that overwhelm, increase your dopamine, reduce the nervous system overdrive, reduce the shame spiral by thought reframes. And now you know, okay, what are my systems? What do I do to get this task started? Generally, it's breaking it down into smaller steps and just going through the small steps. But if you're so stressed out to the point where you can't get off the couch and now you're feeling even worse, you're not going to come to the conclusion of all I have to do is just write it out step by step, you know? So there is very much a process to going into this paralysis and coming out of this paralysis. but it also comes back to recognizing what you need specifically as an ADHDer, because there's a spectrum, right? What I need is not going to be the same thing that you need. What you need is not going to be the same thing that the next person needs. So that's one of the reasons that I like doing, going through, you know, the values and also going through the acceptance and self-realization and understanding of ADHD with my clients, because then we can get to that underlying issue and then we can put in place an understanding of this is what happens when you feel X, this is how you get out of this situation, you know. So very long-winded answers today.
No, it's really, I really want to make this helpful for our listeners, because not many people have access to an ADHD coach such as yourself. So I think it's a really, even if they can just take away some tips from today's episode, or if they are thinking about working with someone like yourself, I think it's a really good insight into what they might be able to get, like what extra value, why that might be worth their time. Because I think when you're sitting on the couch and you're stuck, it's hard to know what next step to take. And that leads really beautifully into my next question, because as you were speaking, I was thinking, like, you said spreadsheets, and I straight away thought, well, my solution to that is to outsource. So the way I've kind of approached a lot of my executive dysfunction is to kind of categorize them. And I wonder if you have some sort of system of your own where there are some things that you want to teach people, or people decide themselves, these are things I want to work on. It might be showering and creating a beautiful environment around showering. If there are like 17 areas to work on, like, it's obviously a ridiculous idea to try and work on them all at once. So it makes sense to sort of tackle them one by one. And then I also am a big fan, as I said, of like some of them you should just definitely outsource. Mm-hmm. Like, why force something that just, it's just causing so much cognitive friction. It's reducing your ability to tackle the tasks that are semi difficult for you. So you might as well just outsource the really difficult ones, and then you have more energy for the semi-difficult ones. So, like, how do you approach that sort of categorizing when someone comes to you with like 20 different things they want to work on? Like, how do you start to work through that with them?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's very individualized for sure. But overall, it very much depends on where their initial struggle is. So for example, if somebody comes to me and they're like, I'm a business owner and my biggest struggle is just everyday day-to-day tasks, you know, setting up my environment for my job, making sure that I get these particular tasks done throughout the day. So organization, reducing some of that task overwhelm, reducing stress in general and anxiety, because if you have it from, for example, a household task that you didn't do, which we generally outsource, then it starts to kind of trickle off into your work tasks. Because when you're anxious, you're anxious. You know, if you're not reducing the anxiety or coping with it in any manner, it's going to start kind of falling into your work life. And so I do an assessment. First, I'll have them fill out a particular sheet that looks at their health and wellness behaviors, their sleep, their everyday overall executive functions. So what does your task process look like? How's your organization? How do you feel about your memory? You know, things like that, your working memory. And then we sit down and we figure out where in particular do you struggle the most. That's where we're going to start. Currently, I start all of my clients, regardless of what you're struggling with nutrition. Nutrition behaviors, understanding nutrition, understanding how it affects your ADHD, because generally, that's where everything stems from. Yes, the systems and the environmental modifications really help. But if we can get your nutrition under control, you're going to already feel significantly better to make those better choices once I put a plan in place. So almost everybody gets nutrition training when they come to me for coaching. So we'll look at that. That's the main thing. But then we will sit down and decide, okay, so if you're struggling in work, what is it specifically that you're struggling with? Is it, you know, being punctual? So time management, let's put some skills in place for that if we need to. Or is it sitting down and reducing task overwhelm because you have so many moving parts? For example, as a business owner, if you have so many moving parts, how can we make it easier for you to bring those parts together but not feel overwhelmed with the amount of tasks that you have going on, you know? So there are main executive function categories that I tend to look at, but they all have a lot of override. So if we can tackle, for example, organization, that falls into different areas of your life, right? Mm-hmm. If you can organize something like your calendar, it makes it a lot easier to then be punctual, to be on time, because you're recognizing you have systems in place where maybe you have notifications, maybe you use a large visual calendar, maybe you use a dry erase board in a separate room, maybe you have the notifications that go off on your watch, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of that will overlap. Whereas if a client comes to me and they're like, well, I'm having a really hard time with just getting started for the day. Okay, if that is something that you're really struggling with, let's also take a look at your sleep. ADHDers are chronically poor sleepers. A lot of that hyperactivity tends to come out in our sleeping behaviors. And so we procrastinate on sleep, which means that we sleep later during the day, or maybe we're not getting enough, or maybe we're waking up too frequently. If we can look at that, then that will tell us, okay, so maybe one of the reasons that you're having a hard time starting in the day is because you're tired, right? So how can we make your mornings a little bit more exciting? How can we create motivation in the mornings for you to simply just get out of bed so you can start your day? So there are a lot of moving parts, but also a lot of overlaps. And most people that I've talked to, yes, I'm very big on systems, but the systems stem from underlying causes like lack of healthy eating, right? Lack of movement to create the endorphins, to create the dopamine, to let some of that hyperactivity out so you can actually sit down and focus. Things like sleep. Almost nobody, unless you're specifically an ADHD sleep coach, really looks at sleep and ADHD. They're just like, oh, you're a poor sleeper. That sucks. But like, sleep is everything to us. You know, if you're not sleeping, you're not performing, you're exhausted, you have brain fog, you're not eating correctly, you don't want to work out, right? Literally all of your choices, almost all of your choices stem from sleep. So I guess to answer your question, I work on like three main behaviors, which are the health and wellness behaviors. So the sleep, the nutrition, the exercise, but then after I do the assessment with my clients and see specifically what it is that they need, then we will find one large ADHD category to work on. So like one particular executive dysfunction, because like I said, sometimes when you can learn the skills for one, they just overlap into the next. If you can understand what, for example, visuals work for you, what environmental modifications work for you, then you can say, cool, I really like this for this particular skill, for this particular task. Let me take that and move it into a different category and see if it'll work in, you know, for example, working memory, right? So using the organization skill that you learned to work on working memory type of situation.
Mm. That sounds like a really effective system, because you're tackling it from the perspective of finding the areas like sleep and nutrition that impact everything the most, the underpinning areas, and working on those first instead of trying to do everything at once. And then, as you said, those behaviors that people will learn with you, because they are almost rewiring their brains as they work with a coach, that then all of that translates into other areas. So even if they only work on one area with you and then your time with them, you know, finishes, they can keep on applying all of that across their life and almost use those models in new areas.
Yes, 100%. And that's what I love about behavioral science is it can very much be generalized. Once you learn how the behaviors are formed and understand how the behaviors are formed, and then also understand how, for example, pairings work, or some people might call it habit stacking if you read James Clear, same concept. And also understand how reinforcement and punishment work and what that looks like in your life. But also, in addition to those things, what systems work for you, whether you're a visual learner, auditory learner, you know, it makes it a lot easier to then take all of those and say, cool, I'm struggling with this maybe new behavior that I discovered that never really paid attention to. How can I utilize all of that and make this a little bit more manageable in my life?
I love that. It's just, I think, something that doesn't come naturally to us. So to have support yes. in this way, like to almost take we're very big picture ADHD brains. We go very, very big, zoom out very wide.
Yes.
We see everything all at once. So if there's a little problem that we have, we zoom out and see every problem that we have all at once. And then the emotion of that just makes us go, it's just insurmountable. We'll yes. never be able to change all of this. So to have someone like sit down on the floor with us and just go, hey, let's walk through each of these little things. Let's go over to that corner and look at what's over there. And then let's mm-hmm. go over to that corner. Like, it doesn't all have to be done in one session. And, yes. and it's almost like I like to think of any skill that I learn in my own journey, in my, you know, in rewiring some of my brain neural pathways. I like to think of it like, once it's done, it's not done forever. Like, obviously things can change, but it's like you work on it and it's like you've really worked on it. It's not like you have to keep going back and, you know, going over it and over it for the rest of your life. Like, you mm-hmm. need some repetition at the beginning, almost like starting to ride a bike. You need a good mm-hmm. push, and then the bike's coasting along, and then you go to the next one. I mean, that's how I see it, you know, that
yes.
when you're creating these neural pathways, the whole point of them is that they become automatic, and then that frees yeah. up. Frees you up to explore other things and work on other things.
100%. 100%. I agree. It's all about just getting started. Once you get started, it makes it a lot easier to maintain. And it's beautiful to see ADHDers show up and they're like, I'm just in overwhelm all the time. And then they learn some skills and they're like, I utilized this at home for this particular task and it worked. I'm like, look at you go, you know, something that you learned from a behavior that is absolutely not related to what you're currently doing. You learned a particular skill and were able to generalize that skill to this other behavior that now made your life a little bit easier. How beautiful, you know? So it is very great to see.
And if we had that kind of level of education for young kids, their whole self-concept would change because they would feel so empowered to examine their own behavior. All of us would benefit from this, really. And then they would grow up into ADHD adults who are really in control and understanding their challenges, but having strategies to deal with that. So they wouldn't have the self-esteem issues to that extent, I don't think.
Yes. Yes, I agree. It would give them more opportunity to explore their ADHD and then also come to the self-acceptance of, I have ADHD, this is just how I work, but I have all of these other systems that work for me, and I know they work for me because they're specific to me. You know, yes, I talk a lot about generalized concepts, like I said, reinforcement, punishment, pairing, but it's all individual to the person. Right. I wouldn't tell every single person, hey, if you have a hard time getting up in the morning, go watch some TV. Right. That's not everybody cares for TV. Not everybody likes watching TV. It's not going to work across the board. It's what works for you, what works specifically to get you out of bed versus just making it very general and saying this works across the board for everybody. It really is fantastic because it allows, like I said, that acceptance piece to come out and that understanding and self, not self-realization, but self-discovery in a way of what your ADHD specifically presents as versus just assuming, oh, I have all of the same traits as everybody, because your hyperactivity might look different than my hyperactivity. We need two different practices in order to either manage that, reduce it, or have a different output for it, right? So I definitely agree with you. I think that this would be, if our kids who have ADHD had more, what's the word I'm looking for? had more availability to services like this, it would be fantastic. Because I know some people might hate me for this, but because I have an autism background, I worked out, did a lot of work with kids. Seeing the difference that behavior analysis makes in the autism field when working with kids, and them really coming into their own and understanding what their autistic traits are and what their autism looks like, they thrive. It's fantastic to see. You know, they really start to understand themselves and are okay with the fact that they have autism because they know how to manage, versus our ADHD kiddos who we just tell them, sit down, be quiet, relax, you're fine, right? Instead of teaching them the skills needed to really come into their ADHD and understand what that looks like, makes me wish that we had a little bit more, I guess, more services available for our little ADHD kiddos.
Mm. And a follow-up to that, and then I've got one more question, and then we'll wrap up. So the end is in sight, but this has been amazing. I'm delighted in every minute. But I guess the sort of what I feel like this, the whole exploration that we've done sort of needs to round it out is this idea of a strengths-based approach as well. So you're sort of talking about what I hear you sort of talking about with the autism example is sort of a real strong pride in the uniqueness of that brain-based difference. And that's what I'm trying to do with Future ADHD. I'm really trying to bring a strength-based approach. And that's why I think the planner that I created was so well received, because it had a bunch of tools based in this encouraging strength-based atmosphere that was guilt and shame free. Mm-hmm. So like in your work with people, what role does focusing on their strengths play in working with them on their challenges? How do those two things work together to really help them succeed?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you actually just made me think of a recent modification that I made in my business where I give clients resources. You know, I'll give you resources, worksheets, things to work on, homework, etc. And for the longest time, I had a strengths and weaknesses worksheet. And the idea here was you write down your strengths and we use the strengths to improve your weaknesses, right? And then I sat down one day and I was like, why do we care about their weaknesses, right? Why, what's the point of this when we can just use their strengths? I already know their weaknesses. They've told me what they are in an intake, right? Through chatting, through conversation, check-ins, whatever it may be. Why do I need to bring that out even more and have them have this sheet that they get to see all the time of these are the things that I suck at, you know? And so I went and I changed that to strengths and skills. And if we can, I'm a big believer that you can utilize your strengths in order to build on the weaknesses, because you already know where your weaknesses are. We are not limited in the amount of negative self-talk that we have on a daily basis. Let's be honest. We know what we're not great at. It's just very hard for us to actually see it ourselves, because unless you're holding up a mirror and you're actually having a conversation with yourself, sometimes it doesn't come to mind until you hit that wall for a task. And now you're like, oh, I'm this horrible person. I can't get X done. It's such a simple task. Why can't I just do it? I'm never good at whatever, you know, like whatever negative self-talk you can experience, we experience. And so I think that once we can bring out the strengths and understand that, for example, I am very good at communicating with people. I love chatting. I'm an extrovert. It makes me really happy. It allows us to make other discoveries in their life. For example, if you're an extrovert and you love talking to people and you happen to be looking for a job that is more fulfilling and more satisfying, let's build off of that. You know, let's utilize the strengths and the skills that you have that you're really, really good at and find you a job that makes you happy, right? If you're somebody who can recognize that I am a very empathetic person, how can we utilize the empathy for emotional regulation, right? If you're in an argument with a spouse, how can you then calm yourself but also recognize that they might be in some kind of distress and maybe you guys need to separate? Right. There is there are building blocks to utilizing the skills, utilizing the strengths. And as I'm talking, I'm realizing that I also forgot the question that you asked me.
No, you nailed it. That was good. It was about how do you integrate strengths in your practice with people while you're working on their challenges.
Yes.
So you answered that beautifully. So well done. So the final question is just looping back to the very beginning when I said that we came together, we connected, I should say, because you bought the planner and you got my attention straight away because you mentioned you were a behavioralist scientist in the review that you left. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. I'd love to hear what she thinks about the planner. So now here we are like 7 or 8 months later. I've been very, very patient waiting to hear what you think. I'd love to hear what it is about it that really resonated for you and maybe which templates you use or that you recommend to people that really stand out to you.
Yeah. Oh, you just off the bat, I'm one of those people, one of those ADHDers who is in and out with planners. I've tried them all. I've tried the passion planner. I've tried lists, which are still very much present in my life. But I've tried so many different planners and I couldn't ever find anything that was very specifically tailored to me. And then you go on Etsy and you see all of these different things. But yours in particular, I loved that you did research. That makes a world of difference. And sure, I'm sure there are other people out there who did some research on ADHD and tried to create something, but it seems like yours was very generalized to the ADHD population versus specific to what you would like to have in a planner. You know, there are a lot of people who will create a planner and say, well, I base this off of what I need, not thinking your needs are not the same as my needs, you know. You did your research. You know exactly the executive dysfunction that we experience. You actually had one of the biggest things that I loved. You had behavioral science research in there. You know, you talked about the dopamine hits. You talked about putting reinforcers in place. I should have brought my tablet in here because that's where my planner is. You have a section for your get shit done list where you have, or your get shit done day where you have your two tasks and then a reward. And I was like, I love this because I don't have to write my rewards on a separate sheet of paper. They're just there. And I'm very big on that. That's one of the things that I teach my clients where I will say we do if then, so, or first then. So first you do this, then you get to do this. First, you do the task that you have to do, then you can get this reward or this reinforcer or this dopamine hit, whatever it may be. And I remember seeing that and thinking, this is fantastic. This is exactly what I need because it's all on one sheet. Your coloring pages are a favorite of mine. I am notorious for sitting and watching TV, but not truly watching because I'm on my phone and scrolling. So my husband will always have to rewind the show because I'm not paying attention or restart it over again. And so those coloring sheets have been amazing because you can mindlessly still engage in something. You know, your hand is still moving, you're still doing something, but it's so effortless that you can pay attention to whoever it is that you're talking to or whatever it is that you're doing. And the fact that you actually have the research in there, you know, I love that. I think that was one of the first things that caught my eye because you let other people know that you know what you're talking about. A lot of people don't outwardly share research. They almost like keep it to themselves. And I never really understood that, you know, they'll talk about certain things, but they won't ever put, you know, a link to an article or label a particular practitioner who is very common or popular in the field. They'll just say, this is where I got this information and go on about talking about the information. Whereas you, by the way, I bought ADHD or ADHD 2.0, so I can go ahead and read it. You had a lot of really great resources in there that people can actually reference if they want to know more about a particular topic. And I love that. And so everything in that was just very ADHD friendly. Not to say that other planners are not, but this was just more comprehensive. I could tell you knew what you were talking about. Your teaching background is very, very openly there. And I love it. I love it. So, you did a fantastic job. And I recommended this planner to clients, to friends. I know quite a few people who use it now. And it's a fun thing to use. Even the daily sheets, I like that you have options, because sometimes you'll open a planner and they're like, this is just what the page looks like. Take it or leave it. You can't change it. Whereas here, mm-hmm. I started off with one particular daily sheet and then realized that I liked the second one better because I could track my water and my food and my movement and whatever. And that's just been mm-hmm. my go-to from there on out. So I love the whole thing. I love the whole thing. You did a fantastic job.
Well, thank you. And I was just going to say, it's interesting what you said about the science aspect, because when I was creating it, I thought I want to create it out of my lived experience. But exactly what you said, I wanted to add the science in, and that was the reason I added it in, because I didn't want it to just be from my lived experience, because I had this yes. fear, probably for a good reason. I had this fear that I couldn't represent everyone. Like, I don't know if everyone, yeah. and I was exactly. fairly newly diagnosed when I created it too. So I hadn't even known I had ADHD all that long. And so I'd done this massive deep dive into everything, like typical ADHD style. And I was researching it for my son too, to work out whether to go and get him diagnosed or not. And so I was just like living in this world of scientific research. And so when I created the planner, it was like a no-brainer to use that as my underpinning, because I just thought, well, this will mean that, as exactly as you said, it will translate to as yes. broad an experience of ADHD as is possible. And I'm really glad that it landed, because it was a bit of a gamble, and we were the first people on Etsy to bring in the science, and then since we've brought it in, lots of people have done the same and copied us. And yeah, it's actually really good. I mean, there have been some straight out copies, I will say. We've had to get a few stores shut down that have stolen our work. But the people that have just taken it as inspiration, it's great, because it means that the quality of all the work increases. So as long as they're not directly copying our ideas, obviously, but if there's just more high quality, scientifically backed, research backed, ADHD resources in the world, that's a very good thing. So I just think the more the better. So that's why I love collaborating with people like you as well, because you're doing the same thing in your corner of the world, and it's just incredible.
I completely agree.
So Lily, it's been a delightful conversation. It has been extensive, and I already know that I'm going to split this into two episodes, because I think it's going to go really well in that format. But thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your knowledge, your expertise, and so generously walking us through what the experience of working with a coach with a behavioral science background is like. I think it's very rare, and that's why I wanted to give people a bit more of an insight into it today. It's been really great. So thank you for your time, Lily.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. This has been fantastic, and fantastic meeting you. Thank you for getting me back on the planner train. I was struggling there for a little bit because I didn't know. I'd done so much research on planners, and I guess maybe research isn't the right word, but I looked for quite a few, and then I found you. So I'm glad we were able to connect. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. If anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. I don't know if Grace can put that in.
I will definitely put it in the description. I got a bit distracted with our final comments there, Lily, but thanks for reminding me. So please let us know where people can find you and your work on Instagram, on your website. What's your details?
Yeah. My website is a little bit under construction. I'm still making the full-blown transition to ADHD coaching on my website. So that should be done hopefully by the end of March or April. But if anybody does want to check it out, it's info. My email is info@wellnessmantra.org. And then the website is wellnessmantra.org. My Instagram is itslilia, itslilyaa. And I promise you guys, I'm very friendly. Just shoot me a message and we can chat it out.
Yeah. And I will put all of those links in the show notes for this episode or anywhere you're listening to this podcast. So Thanks again, Lily. Yeah. And I can't wait to push this episode live. It'll be great.
I'm so excited. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me for today's episode. And if you're keen for more, we have a lot of free resources on our website, futureadhd.com, where you can also buy our planners and support tools. Our future ADHD planners are based on the latest neuroscience and have a unique build-as-you-go format, which makes them different to your average planner. This feature makes it ridiculously easy to pick up where you left off, even if you miss weeks or months at a time, without the shame spirals, guilt, or critical self-talk. Our digital version works with iPads, iPhones, Android tablets and Android phones, Windows and Macs. We also have a printable version for those who love paper and pen. Join almost 20,000 neurodivergents who have downloaded our planners and say that this is the first planner they've ever been able to stick with, because it's designed to work with your creative, inconsistent, divergent, non-linear brain. And if you want to watch a planner walkthrough or learn more about Future ADHD and our mission, check out our Instagram and TikTok, future.adhd, and of course our website, futureadhd.com.